All right, this time it's actually episode 10. Did you realize last time I said it was episode 10 and I told you it was episode 9?
And I was looking for episode 9 on the folder, and I was like, there is no episode 9.
Yeah, look, that was my bad. Anyway. All right, welcome back, everyone. We've had a couple weeks off. Welcome back to the latest episode of ClickCast. You've got Spoo here, and we've also got Kai this week, as always.
Hello.
How are you going?
Good. It's good to be back, and it's good to be talking again. How have you been?
Yeah. Nah, good. It's been all right. Well, as you probably know, but no one else knows, I did my hip, so I haven't been able to walk or sleep or do anything that I normally like to do. So I'm kind of a bit of a cripple right now. But, you know, life's great otherwise.
So how did that come about, Steve?
I was playing social basketball and I was running down the court. No one around me, by the way, hadn't gotten bumped. My hip yelled at me and I went down like a ton of bricks. Like, have been joking.
Yeah,
you would have thought, like, someone watching would have thought, oh my gosh, is this a game of like what English Premier League? Like, I just went down without someone touching me. It's like watching that happen.
That's almost like injuring yourself walking down the street, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, mate. No, I feel great. I'm 24 and I've got hip problems. Don't get old. It's not fun.
Steve, famous last words.
I think last time we recorded, it was about 18th, 19th of February. Facebook had just sort of defriended Australia. I think that was the words that ScoMo and Josh Frydenberg said. You know, but a lot's happened sort of since then. It's been almost a month since we recorded. Kai, do you want to give us a quick rundown?
So... What did we hear? So since then, Facebook kind of agreed to strike deals with the individual news media outlets. So they effectively backed down. And they just agreed in principle. But have we seen much since?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, they reversed their ban, right? You know, I think it literally happened the day after we recorded and published. So it made us kind of look silly. But yeah, they reversed the ban on Facebook. No, they reversed the ban on news. Facebook did. Basically, they then started having chats with Josh Frydenberg and the rest of the government, and then they agreed in principle that they'll work within the code. So then the government was like, great, let's get this legislation through, and then everything got pushed through. I think there were some minor amendments that were put on there. I'm not exactly sure on what they were, but, you know, I think ultimately, at the end of the day, I think the government won out on that. I think Facebook sort of realized the sort of global backlash. I think a lot of international sort of governments as well were coming in to bat for Australia, sort of saying like, hey, we're going to support you here. You're not on your own. And then I think Facebook realized, all right, I think we've just backed ourselves into a corner right now.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. But I guess the other perspective is, you know, I'm not sure if we called it, but it seemed like Facebook was doing a bit of a power play by pulling news out for, you know, however short period of time, because they were doing it very broad stroked, right? They were cleaning out government sites as well. So I wonder what actually did, you know, what was happening in the background that we are not seeing.
100% there's things going on that we'll never know what's going on. But yeah, I said this last time, 100% it was a power play to sort of flex their muscle to the government saying, hey, you want to play ball? Well, we control basically a good chunk of the internet. Most of your citizens use Facebook day to day. You know, you want to mess with us, you mess with the bulls, you're going to get the horns.
Exactly right.
But I guess, you know, since then, they still haven't signed a deal with everyone. So I think they've signed what they call, statements of intent or memorandum or something or other.
Letters
I don't know
intent.
What they're...
Yeah,
something like that. I think with a couple of the smaller players as well as Seven West Media, which obviously owns, you know, Channel 7 as well as a couple of the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny or the interesting thing is that they haven't signed any agreement with, you know, three of the biggest news outlets in the country. So you've obviously got the Murdochs in News Corp Australia, you know, mm-hmm. depending on which side of the political spectrum you fall on, you'll also think that they're evil or you'll think that they're great. Sort of moving closer to the middle of that political spectrum, you've got Nine Entertainment, which obviously owns Channel 9, Network, and I think... Does Nine own a couple of the newspapers now, I think?
Don't know. We need to check on that.
I thought they bought Fairfax.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they own some of the newspapers, the Fairfax portfolio. And then you've got, on the complete other end of the political spectrum, the ABC. They haven't signed a deal with any of those three sort of big groups yet as of recording today, on the 11th of March. So, you know, we'll still see how that sort of pans out. you know, Facebook, to be honest, I wouldn't trust them as far as I can throw them. So we'll see how that goes. But they have signed deals with some of the smaller networks. So maybe they're just sort of hashing out some of the finer details still, given how much of our news is pretty centralized across, you know, those three outlets.
Yeah. And a quick fact check. Yes, Nine does, in fact, own Fairfax Media. And that happened at the end of 2018.
Yeah. See? Swoo, 1. Kai, 0. So email and calendar has broken on my phone, and I'm not going to lie, it is damn annoying because I have about 6 or 7 accounts on my phone. So whether they're emails, whether they're sort of my junk emails, work emails, proper emails, email and calendar has absolutely cracked the nanas on my phone, and I'm upset and I'm here to have a rant. So gear yourself up, Kai. It's going to be about 3 or 4 minutes of me just talking.
Sure thing. Well, before we start, is this specifically to do with the mail app or is this a third party app?
So it has to do with the native mail and calendar app. Okay. But I think the root cause is from a third party app.
Right.
So the context is I started a new job at a big firm. Their sort of smart device policy is we're not going to give you a phone. You know, we want you to bring your own phone and we'll install what they call mobile device management software to basically get you all the software that you need. And so it sort of falls within their policies.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a whole kettle of fish to talk about there around whether I should have done that or not on my personal phone. Basically, I hashed it out with some mates, not you, and some people at the firm as well. I think everyone agreed that it's fine to put it on my phone.
Yep.
So what I did was I installed this app, which then installed a managed device profile on the phone, which basically, you know, gave it all of my corporate logins and all my passwords, so everything was synced.
Yep.
And as part of that, it installed and loaded in my work email, so it added an account.
Mm-hmm.
Within that, and that uses, so we're on G Suite without revealing who the company is. We use G Suite, and so that added the Google account onto my phone, calendar, and email, and so that was working fine. Everything was groovy. I liked using the native app because then I could, you know, load my personal calendar as well, see everything all in one place, look at my emails all in one place. It just worked easier. So especially with calendars, I think I don't want to put work stuff in my home, my personal calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa.
Yep.
I like to keep it separate, but I want to view them together because it's my life, even though they're two separate. I can't have them overlapping in terms of when things are going to clash.
Mm-hmm.
And so about a week ago, something happened where everything just stopped syncing.
Right.
I'm not kidding. Everything just stopped syncing.
Yeah.
Calendar stopped working. Like, I wouldn't update. I wouldn't get new calendar invites. I couldn't update existing calendar invites. And this wasn't just on my... So, it started out what I thought just on my corporate account.
Mm-hmm.
So, then I was like, all right, I'll just leave that for now. Then I realized no other emails are coming in. So, my 6 or 5 other accounts was completely blocked. And I didn't use them on any other app. So I didn't have the Outlook app installed, didn't have Gmail app installed. Everything came through the native mail and the native calendar app. And so basically, I just got disconnected for about a day and a half and I just had no idea. I just thought nothing was coming through.
Right.
So that, A, was very annoying. So then, B, I was like, all right, you know, classic IT advice. Why don't you turn it off and turn it back on?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the equivalent here, I uninstalled the corporate stuff.
Yep.
And reinstalled it. And that made it even worse. So now the accounts are there,
uh-huh,
but the calendars don't even appear. And so I'll put a link in the show notes and I'll put it in the podcast art. But basically, what is in my calendar now says, you know, my... So I'm not sure if you... Do you use iOS calendar?
I do, yeah.
So if you go on your phone now...
Yeah.
Open up calendars, hit the calendar button,
uh-huh,
at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
Do you have multiple calendars on there?
I do.
So, you know how your account has, like, a small font in capitals, say, like, Outlook, for example?
Uh-huh.
And then there'll be, like, 2 or 3 rows after that, like, for the specific calendars within that account.
Yes.
So, mine says Outlook.
Uh-huh.
And then there's nothing else under that.
Right.
And then it'll have my corporate mail.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing under that.
Yeah.
And then it'll have other, which are the ones that are native on my device. And that, yep, has calendars. But everything else is blank. I'll literally send you a text right now so you can see. It's so, yeah, bizarre. And I don't know how to fix it. I've tried uninstalling and reinstalling. Now, the really funny thing is now that normally when I uninstall my corporate account, the G Suite corporate account disappears from my account menu. But now it won't disappear, and I can't delete it because it's a managed account. So I've got this account there that I think is the issue, but I can't delete it. And I've talked to IT, and they're like, oh, we don't know what to do. Maybe you should just reset your device. And I'm like, no. I am not resetting my device because I don't want to back it up.
Yeah.
Well, I do back it up anyway, but like it's a pain in the bum, and I don't know what to do. Now, it's really frustrating. So someone who's listening, please help me fix it.
So when you deleted the managed services app, did your personal stuff start syncing again?
No. So the weird thing was when I deleted it, the Google corporate account wouldn't go away.
Mm.
And I think that's the blocker.
Yeah. That's interesting. That isn't. Do you know what that managed services thing is actually doing?
So what it does, it installs a profile, which then puts some security settings on your phone. Like you have to have a 6-digit passcode, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You can't share some things from certain apps. So what this thing does, it basically enrolls you into their system. It downloads a couple of apps as well. It has its own VPN. So you're supposed to, when you're at work, turn the VPN on and funnel any work traffic through there.
Right.
You can turn it off after work because that's fine.
Yep.
But that's what you're supposed to do. And then it also a portal into some sort of, I wouldn't say secret app store, but corporate-specific app store, because there's a lot of apps on there that are, I guess, built for, you know, my specific employer and not for public. So you can't find them on the app store. The only way you can get it is through this app. So I'm not... That's at a high level what it does. But the most important thing is that it installs and logs you in to your corporate account into the iOS sort of system.
Yeah, right. Have you tried downloading the Gmail app?
Yeah, so that's what I have to do now. So I
does
have
that
to,
work?
So the Gmail app works, and I had to download Google Calendar and all the other G Suite stuff to make everything work, just to get work stuff on my phone. Because let's be honest, like that's what, like in terms of emails, that's probably more important. Everything else I can do on my home computer.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten that working now, but you know, it's not good. I need my personal email on my phone. It's very annoying trying to log in through Safari because it's like, oh, what's your password? I don't know what my password is.
Yeah, and I'm assuming you've troubleshooted this in your settings, right? Like, if you go to your fetch new data to look at your syncs, it's all as per normal?
Yep, everything's fine. Everything's fine. I've actually... So, you know, under each of your accounts, you can turn, like, mail, contacts, calendar, reminder off?
Yep.
I've tried doing that. It won't let me turn it off for the corporate account. So I think there's a loop there that's broken.
Right.
It refuses to delete that account, and that account is stopping it from installing a new one as well.
Right.
So you can't such is my life right now.
And your fetching data settings are all as per normal?
Yep. Everything's as per normal. Mm. Haven't changed it. So I might have to download the Outlook app just to get my personal email on here for now. But, you know, it's really annoying because now my calendars are split up.
That's really frustrating.
So now when someone's like, oh, yeah, do you want to have dinner? It's like, I actually don't know because I don't know where to check.
You could always get a third-party app. Like,
no, but I can't put my work one on third-party.
Ah, right.
Because it's like corporate accounts are so locked down.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put personal stuff in my work because, you know, they don't need to know about my life. They probably know about it anyway just because...
just because they're in your phone anyway, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. I know that. But I don't know. Should I reset it?
I would. I think something's corrupted. So back it up, reset it.
But wouldn't that just happen anyway in the backup? It would get recorded. Like, that's what I was thinking because I could try and back it up and restore from backup, but wouldn't that just replicate the issue?
It depends on which part of the system's corrupt.
Well, I don't know how it backs up.
Yeah.
I don't know how this works. I don't know what it backs up, because I the only thing I want it to back up is, like, personal information. I don't care about settings. I just need photos, contacts, messages already backed up in the cloud anyway, because it's iCloud message, so... Yeah.
Because it sounds like it's something to do with the backend, like OS that's been it's been corrupted by this third party, and so it looks like you just need to reset that to default. So I don't think it has anything to do with your settings.
Oh wait, there's a button here: reset all settings. Oh, because I tried resetting network settings. I don't know why. That ended up being a pain in the ass because I had to add every Wi-Fi network back into my phone.
Good one.
It was really annoying. Maybe I could just reset all settings.
Yeah, try that.
What now?
Maybe delete the managed services app first, and then reset all settings.
Oh, that's smart. But then I have to go through the whole process again. It takes like a whole half hour.
Yeah, but it's either that or you just have to manage two calendars, Steve.
We really shouldn't be doing this while we're recording. I might do that tonight, but that's my issue right now. Let's touch on that next time we come back, or if I actually do this while we're recording, I'll tell you what happens as we go.
Sounds good.
So, Disney Plus has just hit 100 million subscribers, I think, on a global scale. They announced it, I think, yesterday on an earnings call or something or other in the States, to be honest. I don't know if 100 million is a lot, to be honest, because actually, if you think about it, I don't think there are that many global streaming services.
Yes.
You've got Disney and you've got Netflix, and they're really the only global ones, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. You have a few local ones that do pretty well as well. So, Stan, for example.
Yep.
And there is a newly launched one called Paramount Plus. They launched today or like recently in the States.
Oh, okay.
And they're looking to come over to Australia.
Okay. Yeah. So, they're not here yet. Yeah. So, there's actually not that many global ones. So, like, you know, if you're just like, if you're Stan, you're never going to get to 100 million because there's not 100 million people in Australia.
They're only at like 3.3.
Yeah. So, like, 100 million is a lot. I mean, if you compare that to Netflix, I don't have their exact subscriber count, but I think the last thing I heard was they're at 200 million. And so they're at half the size of Netflix in how long have they been in the market? Not long, because I haven't had to renew yet and I paid for a year.
Yes. Yes. It's been pretty recent. Do you know how Apple TV is faring? Have they hit Apple a million TV yet, Steve?
I don't think anyone's paying for that. You know, they're still giving it away, right?
Yeah, that's right.
No, they're the other global one. Yeah, so they're the three. Netflix, Apple TV Plus, and Disney Plus.
Yes. So, I think I've seen stats recently. I think they hit about, I think 60% of their subscribers are on their one-year trial. And
is this Apple TV Plus?
Yeah, Apple TV. And only, I think, 30% of the people they surveyed, subscribers they surveyed, were willing to continue. And that's fair enough. There's just not much there.
That's the hard thing with this, because, like, if you break streaming down into sort of two things, there's one is the back catalog, right? Stuff that's old that people just like to reminisce, and that's what I mainly use streaming for.
Yeah.
And then there's the other side in terms of new content, and I guess the hard thing for Apple TV Plus, or Apple in this case, is that they just don't have a back catalog because they're literally coming into this market brand new. Netflix has been around for, over a decade, haven't they?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, they've been around for ages, and they were arguably just went out and signed deals with every sort of media outlet they could to just hoover up content to get people on there. It's only in the last 3 or 4 years that they've really made a really big play into building their own, developing their own content.
Yeah.
Oh, and so I know Apple's like pouring literally billions of dollars into sort of new TV content, whether that be films or actual TV shows, but it's going to take them a while before they get there. And I honestly think they've done the right thing in giving, basically just handing it out for free.
Yes.
Because all you need to do really is just get people hooked on one or two shows.
Yeah.
And then that's enough to keep them to subscribe.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt. What I didn't quite understand, well, there's a couple of guys I have with Apple TV, but what I don't really understand from that strategic viewpoint is why wouldn't you keep it together with Disney Plus first and then separate it out once it gains a bit more traction?
So, like, you were thinking Apple TV, Apple being a, what do you call them? Like a producer, right? Like a network.
Yep.
And then once they, and then, you know, sign with Disney, Netflix for them to distribute your TV, your content, and then when they hit scale, I guess they could. It's not very Apple-esque. I guess Apple likes to own the entire life, like in the entire journey.
Yeah.
If you think about it. And it sounds like that's a very, almost a half-assed approach to entering the market. It's a very considered approach, but like they've got billions of dollars literally coming out of their asses.
Yes. So. Yeah. No, that's right. It was just me thinking with the close affiliation, given that, you know, Apple has a stake in Pixar and Pixar effectively owns, well, They merged with Disney, right? So
I thought Disney owns Pixar.
It was a reverse takeover. So Disney bought Pixar, but the management took over. So
still?
Yeah. Well, back then. So like, that's effectively how the merger happened. So on paper, it was Disney buying Pixar, but it was actually a reverse takeover.
Well, it's before my time.
Yeah.
Well, Pixar's in Disney Plus now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. So they're effectively one company now, right? So I just thought with the close affiliation, why not jump on the Disney bandwagon? Because they are, like, Disney Plus is doing really well. I've got friends in Singapore who's had to, because they're not in Singapore yet. Back when we were having this conversation, they weren't in Singapore. And so they've had to get friends to sign up here and then use a VPN to connect into the Australian network to watch Disney Plus for their kids.
Well, yeah, I mean, Disney Plus has just gone absolutely gangbusters. But yeah, I don't see Apple. Disney are control freaks as well, aren't they?
Like, yeah.
They're just going to butt heads. You know, I want to do this, I want to do that. Nah, we're not working together. It's like, it doesn't really sound like it would ever work. Apple's too stubborn and arrogant to sort of let any control go, as we've seen in sort of every market that they play in.
Yeah. No, that's fair. All right. So going back to Disney Plus hitting, 100 million subscribers now. What do you think were their key differentiators?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was surprised. I'm actually surprised at their sort of runaway success. Mm. You know, if you think about Disney, what comes to my mind is sort of their old catalog. You know, think Lion King, Mulan. You know, their sort of golden heyday, and that's about it. Because their sort of recent stuff in the last sort of half a decade has been hit and miss. You know,
yep.
If you think about a lot of their remakes of those sort of original animated films,
yes,
by and large, they've been duds. They haven't been very good. The sort of best that I've seen is probably Lion King, and even that was like, great. Beyonce's voice is there, and you know their eyes are blue, but you know this doesn't have the sort of magic that the original ones do. And that maybe that's because I come from that generation, right? And you do too. We have high expectations, but you know, I was really surprised that they that they did so well. But
yeah.
You know, I think...
Sorry, the flip side of that is they do have this massive, massive, massive success story called the MCU, right?
Yeah, well, that hasn't come into play until recently. And so, if we rewind back to when I think Disney first came into the market, into the Disney Plus, what, about a year and a half ago, they arguably were late movers and all they really had in their catalogue was the old stuff.
Yeah.
And so, I think they were smart in that if you compare how they entered the market, they actually price themselves at the very low, if not the cheapest end, like the cheapest streaming service they had out there.
Yep.
So if you think about what Netflix is now, it's actually not cheap anymore. I realized I checked my credit card bill the other day. It's $20 a month. Like $20 a month is a lot. Like that's five coffee. Like it's not cheap anymore.
It's a fair bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a red note. I'll tell you that. And then if you look at what Disney launched at, it was $90 for the year. So for the price of, you know, 4.5 months, I got a whole year of Disney Plus. Or they price it also $9 a month. So it's $9 a month or $90 a year. But for the same price as 4.5 months of Netflix, I get Disney's entire back catalog for a whole year.
Mm.
And so I think what also worked in their favor here was, you know, when they started to ramp up their launch, COVID hit.
Yep.
And so everyone was stuck at home.
Yep. Yeah.
And so there's nothing better to do when you're sad and there's a global pandemic and people are dying around you and you can't go outside than watching a cartoon that makes you feel happy about life and forget about how broken the world is.
That's right. That's right. And something probably that does not apply to you would be if you're stuck at home with two kids that's screaming, you're definitely going to get Disney Plus.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Like, since you said it, like, that's the other thing. Like, kids are so important in terms of purchasing decision for a family. Like, if you think about if we look at a sort of different industry, and I'm going to start sounding like I'm at work, but if you look at what Coles did in terms of the whole stickies thing, right?
Mm.
That was to drive traffic, but not through their parents. It was to drag the kids along and make the kids force the parents to spend more.
Yes.
And so that sort of highlighted how important kids are in terms of like overall family spending. And so sort of what Disney Plus, whether they realize this or not, sort of played on or preyed on was more the kids are going to want to watch cartoons, right? And if this shuts them up, parents will pay for it.
100%.
Like, that could charge them double and they'd still pay for it because it is hard to keep kids occupied. It's hard to keep them happy. And having just endless streams of Disney content that's safe for kids, not really educational, but safe for them, keeps them entertained, is very much invaluable. And so I think that's definitely didn't bring people to Disney Plus, but made them more sticky.
Yes, that makes sense.
Because imagine trying to pull a lollipop away from a child. You're just going to make them cry. Whereas if you didn't give them the lollipop, that's different. But in this case, they've gotten the lollipop. You can't pull it away now.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique proposition. And it's probably one of the more family... Well, definitely the more family-friendly streaming service because it kind of appeals to both the adults and the kids, right?
Yeah, and they've got actually a really weird catalogue. I mean, they launched Star, which we'll get into after, but they have a really weird catalogue where most of it's sort of like that kid-focused Disney content, but they've also got some, like, non-kid stuff in there as well. Like, it's definitely not adult-focused,
yeah.
But, like, it's sort of like, you know, sort of that middle ground,
mm-hmm.
which is a bit interesting. So they usually use something for most people,
yeah.
But very different in terms of content compared to Netflix and such.
Very different.
I think the other thing that they've done differently, and I hate this because it's a way of getting more money out of me, but what they've done differently is they've actually tried to bring more content straight to streaming and mm-hmm. then tried to monetize that.
Yeah.
And so they've called that, I think, Disney Premier Access Pass or Disney Premier Access or something or other like that,
mm-hmm.
Where basically I think the only thing they've done it to date are for two movies. One was Mulan, which, by the way, if you haven't watched it, don't. It's really bad. Where, you know, where upon release for the first, I think, couple of months, you have to pay an extra $20-$30 to watch it.
Yeah.
And stream it on Disney Plus.
Yeah, and I think in the absence of people being able to go to a cinema... That kind of makes sense, right? Because these films cost a lot to produce. Yeah, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out as we move towards a COVID normal where people will start to go back to the cinemas.
Well, I hated it. I didn't want to pay... Even though I wasn't going to the cinemas, I didn't want to pay $30 to sit on my couch and watch something. That's ridiculous.
Exactly, right? When you have, you know, thousands and thousands of hours of other content to look into.
Yeah, and especially when it's contingent on your subscription. Like, if I go to JB Hi-Fi and buy a DVD for $30, I have the DVD till I die or someone sits on it.
Mm-hmm.
This will, like, I don't know if I'll continue renewing. Actually, I love Disney Plus, but, you know, most people will think about, well, I don't know if I'm going to have Disney Plus forever. I'm paying for $30 that I'm never going to get back. And it's not like it's a cinema experience either.
Yeah, that is true.
But apparently it's been a bit of a hit because I thought they copped a lot of criticism for it, but they've done it again for the most recent movie. How do you say this? Raya,
I think, yeah.
Raya?
Yeah.
Which apparently is a fantastic movie, by the way, so yeah. I would recommend that you watch that. I haven't seen it because I don't want to pay the $35 or $38 to do it. But, you know, it's actually an interesting model because none of the other streaming platforms in Australia anyway have done that. Like Netflix has brought... you know, a couple of films, big ticket films, straight to streaming, like Borat 2. I don't think Stan have done that at all. But but even when Netflix does it, they don't charge you an additional fee. It's essentially free, kind of, because you're paying, but not really because you're paying, but free to existing subscribers.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think just as you were talking about that, kind of reminds me to the flawed Foxtel model. Because you're paying for a subscription, but you're still having to go through ads, right? So that's effectively the flip side of it, right? You're paying for premium content, but you're still having to go through ads.
Well, Foxtel's arguably dead. Their days are numbered. Their demographic is like anyone over 60 that, you know, doesn't have an iPad.
Yeah,
which is rapidly declining because either they're dying or they're getting iPads.
Morbid. Anyway.
Look, anyway, that is what it is. But, like, you know, I'm surprised that they're going for that. So they're actually trying to get more money out of their subscriber base. But I guess that kind of works when you're charging them basically nothing
mm-hmm.
on a month-to-month basis compared to Netflix. It's less than half the price. So, actually, I stand corrected. Disney Plus upped their price to $12 a month. I remember that, actually. I think a month or so ago. I'm not happy, but I will pay it anyway.
I think they understandably will increase their price as they get more content and as they get more eyes on it.
Well, the other... I think... The actual key thing that they've started to do now, and it's actually a reason why I keep going back to Disney Plus, especially over the last month or so, is they've actually nailed the release of ongoing content. So if you think about normal TV, how do they get you to come back? It's reality TV or a TV series where they stream an episode 1 week at a time and they basically leave you on a cliffhanger and suck you back in the next week or the next day. So you almost have to go back every time. Versus you look at the traditional streaming model. I can't believe I'm saying streaming is traditional now, but the traditional streaming model where, you know, I don't know, say Kim's Convenience is released and mm-hmm. it's just all out. You can binge it within a day, it's done, and that's it. Like, you can watch it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
if you look at some of the new headline TV shows, or I think it's only one they've released so far under this model, but it's been a hit that Disney Plus has released, like WandaVision. Have you seen that, by the way?
I haven't. I've heard good things about it, though.
You should go watch it. It's a fantastic show. Anyone that hasn't watched WandaVision yet, go out and watch it. It's very confusing, but it's super cool. And I also don't recommend that you watch it like all at once. Watch it, like, separate them out by a couple of days or at least a week. Yeah. It actually adds to the suspense. It's a really great show. It's like movie quality, you know, production, but in a half hour snippet. It's fantastic. Like, it clearly they wanted to make a movie out of this,
yeah,
and they didn't.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on from WandaVision.
We'll check it out.
So yeah, what they've done is that, you know, like I said, they release it week by week. So it actually forces people to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people enjoy that, because I think people enjoy the suspense as much as they hate it at the time.
Yeah.
I think it actually builds a bit of excitement, makes people look forward to something, especially in a sort of, well, not post-COVID, but starting to be post-COVID world, especially in Australia. Something to look forward to and really enjoy on the weekend. I think people really like that, and it brings people back and it keeps them subscribing. And then I think now that they've seen how successful it is, I think they've got a couple of other shows in the pipeline to do release under that same model.
Yeah.
And the beauty of what Disney Plus has sort of in their kit bag is that entire, like you said, MCU catalog, right? They've got the rights to pretty much everything in there. And I think they're trying to diversify. So rather than having everything on the big screen in cinemas, they're trying to push some of that out, because MCU has grown to be ridiculously large now. There's more characters than bloody minutes in the film.
That's right.
They're trying to funnel some of them through TV shows and have them build the stories in there rather than all through the films now.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got heaps of content that they're just going to slowly drip feed to people, you know, over time to keep them subscribing. And it just sounds like a big winner to me.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It's, you know, it's a really slow burn, but it's gonna, you know, direct a lot of people towards Disney Plus.
Yeah. And like, especially, like you said, the MCU universe, like if they've got big blockbuster, films being released in cinema, and if there's demand there again, that's naturally going to drive sort of flow on demand, and viewers towards the TV shows, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. And there's also,
and vice versa.
Exactly right. And as you were saying that, it just reminded me of Mandalorian, and I've never seen so many grown men so excited over the release of season 2.
Well, that's true. Even like when Disney Plus first launched, right? Why would you want to go Disney? Actually, I stand corrected. Like, people subscribed to Disney Plus when it first launched because of The Mandalorian.
That's right.
That was actually the only reason why a lot of people subscribe. It's like, oh, I'm not there to watch Lion King. I want to watch Star Wars.
Yeah, yep, exactly right.
And so that really broad catalog that they've just sort of bought out over the last decade or so, I don't think they saw streaming coming, but it's actually worked out really well for them, because now they've got this huge pipeline. And I think they're really investing heaps of money into building out the Star Wars franchise as well.
Yes.
That sounds like there's going to be a heap of content,
exactly,
really good content coming out through Disney now.
Yeah, that's going to keep them super busy.
Well, it's actually exciting because, you know, I don't really watch TV. I don't know if you know that, but I don't really watch TV. And WandaVision was actually one of the few times I would, you know, over the last... there's only 10 episodes, by the way, so
right,
that's really sad.
Yeah.
But that was actually the one show that my girlfriend and I would sit down and be like, all right, let's watch this together. And we'd both wait to watch with each other, because
wow,
Obviously she would never wait.
Yeah.
But we'd both wait and watch for it, and I would actually look forward to it. Like, it's a show that both of us really liked, super high quality, so much suspense. Like, yeah, there's so much in it as well. And yeah, it's just fantastic.
Steve, we both know she watched it already. She was just rewatching it with you.
No, trust me. She had no idea what was going on. She's not a big MCU person. I was so surprised that she liked it, but, like, you know, worked out.
Must be good.
No, I recommend you go and watch it.
Will do.
You'll really like it.
Will do. We'll check it out.
Don't binge it, though.
No.
Don't binge it.
I will drip feed it. So, Steve, I think that, you know, quick one to cap things off today. I've flip-flopped again, so I think if anyone's been following... you know, following our conversations, they would know that I am quite indecisive and that I tend to overthink my decisions. So recently, I have flipped again, and I've decided I think we will go for the standard range plus Tesla.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say I got the iPhone 12 Pro.
I returned it and I bought a new one. No. I was having a look into, because, you know, we are going to make the decision in the next couple of months, and then there's a couple of months lead time as well. But yeah, I think we've landed on leaning on the Senate Range Plus Model 3. And, you know, when we spoke about this a couple of months ago now, we were saying how Australia was going to receive some of the Chinese-made Model 3s, and that's been welcomed by forum members because of the improved kind of production techniques, right? So you'd expect the gaps to be a bit thinner, you'd expect the paint quality to be a bit better, and also the quality control overall to be a bit better, right?
Look, I'm not going to lie, the gaps on Teslas that I've seen, like, calling them gaps are generous. They're bloody canyons.
funny you say that. And so... there was an Elon interview recently, and you know, the interviewer is a big Tesla fan, but he bought a Model 3 as well, and he was saying how come his had, you know, gaps and imperfections, but another Model 3 that came out of the production line a month apart was effectively flawless. And Elon was saying up till or even December in 2020, they were still perfecting some things because they were, you know, they're in ramp up mode. So there's a lot of unforeseen things when they're moving things, when they're moving the production line, even just say a minute quicker, the paint doesn't dry as quick. So there's a lot of little things to figure out. So I think the benefit is, you know, if I wait another couple of months, fingers crossed, I should be able to get something that's produced a little bit better. But on the broad positive side is that Australia, for I think just the standard range plus and the long range models, not the performance, that's coming from China now, and that's also received a boost in range. So previously I think the standard range plus was looking at about 460 or 480 k's full charge, compared to I think it's almost 600 for the performance. So there was quite a big range gap, and so that was why it skewed me towards performance, right? But with the new one, I think the range has gone up to 510, and that's plenty for a full charge for, you know, day-to-day city driving. And you get, you know, the price difference is huge as well. It's 30 grand. So you're saving a fair bit. The other thing that you're giving up would be the speed. So the acceleration speed, you lose about 2 seconds. But yeah, I just don't think I'm going to use that 2 seconds very often.
So, unless you're driving next to me.
Well, yeah, there's that. Look, you know, the reality is if I was ever going to bring the car to the track and use track mode, I would 100% get the performance. But knowing me and knowing how much a car is a utility for me, it's very much just let's get something that's, you know, that's a bit more practical and more prudent.
So much to unpack there. I mean, the first thing I just want to... I think one of the Elon interviews, it might have been the same one that you mentioned. I think he actually said, guys, I wouldn't recommend you buy a car right now.
Yeah.
I think he actually said that and said, like, because we're wrapping up, things are changing. Now's not the time to buy a Tesla right now in terms of quality. So,
That's right. So it's either... Yeah, he was saying you either buy it early stage or you buy it once production's kind of plateaued.
Yeah,
because right now, as they put it, you know, they're trying to change wheels on a bus that's traveling on, you know, 80 miles per hour. So, yeah, look, that I'll look into it. I'll look at where the plateau is, and then, you know, we'll make a call on it. But yeah, it seems like it's improving, and that's a big plus, I think.
Look, I hope for your sake it's improving because, you know, I've seen stories and photos that don't appear to be doctored of literally the glass roofs of Teslas flying off.
Yeah, that's concerning. I think that was one of the earlier Model Ys, wasn't it?
I think it happened on the Model 3 and the Model S as well.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Concerning. Yeah,
so... No, it's built-in feature. You get an automatic sunroof that, you know, you can't retract once it's open.
Exactly right.
But that's cool. I mean, I'm surprised that you didn't go for the performance because, you know, that 2 seconds of acceleration, that's I don't know, 2 seconds doesn't sound like a lot, but I test drove the Model S performance. I didn't drive the Model 3 performance because they didn't have one on the day for me.
Yeah.
But it's super fast. As much as I don't like it, it's a lot of fun. And
it is. Oh, look. It is a lot of fun. There's no doubt. I had, like, you know, cheek to cheek smiles when I was driving the performance on both the Model 3 and Model S. But again, 30 grand is pretty substantial. And it's not only the 30 grand up front, right? It's also more expensive insurance premiums. You're looking at, you know, probably 2 to 2.5 grand compared to 1 to 1.5.
Money's made to be earned. You'll be fine.
Yeah. So there's the insurance concerns as well. And the other thing that used to bug me was the rims. So for center range, you used to get those aero hubcaps, and that's all.
Yeah, those
got,
weird
right?
dinner yeah, plate ones.
Yeah. And now you can actually upgrade those, so it's an option again.
Oh, well, they're actually starting to introduce optionality. I remember when they first started, they took that really lean approach. I think they still take a pretty lean approach across the board.
Right? Yeah. Exactly right. But yeah, just a little bit more optionality.
Well, the biggest question is for me is, what happens if between now and when you buy it, they make the steering wheel that stupid new steering wheel as well?
I actually don't think that's going to happen that quickly. Because even the new Model S that's to be launched in the States soon, I think they've seen leaks of it, and it's still the normal steering wheel. So it's not going to be there anytime soon.
Okay. Oh, there you go. But yeah, in terms of the range, like 500Ks, I think I've said this to... I don't know if I said this to you before. Like, I don't know if range is going to be as big of an issue for those who live in the city, because the reality is... Oh, sorry. Maybe not the city. For those who live in the suburbs, because the reality is you're going to park a car in the garage, you know, 9 times out of 10 during a year.
Mm-hmm.
And which means you're going to plug it in 9 days out of 10 every year, which means, A, day-to-day, you would do maybe 100, 150Ks max if you're going on a long
that's right.
drive for a day.
Yeah.
You will charge your battery to full every night.
Mm-hmm.
So the range that you need, maximum, well, you'll never probably go past 50% unless you don't plug it in every night.
Exactly right. Yeah. And there's the supercharging network's pretty comprehensive these days on the eastern states.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's what the thing is. Like, I don't think... So there's all this hoopla has been made around, you know, oh, the charging infrastructure's not there yet. Mm. Oh, you know, I can't find somewhere to plug my, you know, car in when I need to fill up. But the reality is you're going to be driving out to 80% every day.
Yeah, exactly right.
If you live in the suburbs or even metro, that's not a point. So I actually... Bold call here from QuickCast. I think... That, well, actually, I don't know how much of a call this is, but let's roll ahead with it anyway. I think the future, if you think about, you know, fast forward 100 years, petrol, ICEs are gone, diesel's gone, all that stuff's gone, and it's just electric vehicles, or by and large electric vehicles. I don't think we will see the current, fuel infrastructure replicated at that scale anymore.
Mm. Yeah,
I don't think you will see a electric charging thing for cars at every corner or every two street corners. I very much think it'll be consolidated down to a handful per city hub in terms of metro areas. I think it might be more common in regional, because that sort of has the need for longer distance. But even then, I still think, I don't know if electric can fill that gap even in the next 50 hundred years, just because of the economics around that. But I could be proven wrong. But that's my bold call. You don't need charging infrastructure to make EVs work in the city.
I think so. Like, I completely agree with you. I think, there's two things to think about here. One is the regional side of things, as you said. So it's when you're driving out longer ranges. So I think there will still be rest stops that will effectively, that people will need to stop for at least half an hour to charge their cars, right? So I think it'll be interesting to see how that kind of plays out, because it's going to be more focused on the lifestyle side of things, right? How do you actually make it a bit more comfortable for people to chill for, you know, half an hour to 1 hour? So it's not just going to be a Hungry Jack's or a Macca's, right? It's probably going to be something a little bit more engaging. So that I think will be a bit of a rehash of what's currently out there. And I agree with the city side of things. You know, everyone's going to charge at home. And if anything, like, it's probably going to be these chargers will be more decentralized. So they're probably going to be installed in car parks, even more so people can just leave the car there while they go do other things. And, you know, if you're a mall or a car park, you're incentivizing people to stay there longer, right? Because you need to charge your car.
Yep. So, yeah, exactly. Mm. So I think the way in terms of, like, the fuel net, if you think about the fuel network now in terms of, like, the Shells and the petrol stations, they're relatively small, but they're very common.
Yeah.
You'll probably see it go the other way in terms of they'll probably get, like, charging infrastructure. You'll get bigger hubs because, you know, like, regional, you're going to have a lot of people stopping there one at a time, and you need the capacity because they all stay there for a while.
Mm.
You'll have bigger hubs, but fewer of them, I think.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Yeah, it'd be an interesting challenge to solve, actually, as a nation, because it's a pretty common sight in the UK. So if you walk around London, street side parking, there's a lot of charges. And I was talking to someone I met there, and she was saying to actually roll it out at any meaningful scale, it's still going to take $1 billion So, like, there's a long way to go, even though visibly they were everywhere already. And that just shows how much ground we have to make as a country.
Yeah, and that's just in terms of financial cost, right? Like, yeah. I'm still not convinced that the overall equation in terms of, especially with the way battery tech now is now in terms of lithium and stuff, I still think producing an electric car over a 5 year, 5 to 7 average year lifespan, I still think, I don't know, you probably break even in terms of overall net emissions into the atmosphere.
Yeah. But look, it's going to be a tough slog, but we need to move in that direction pretty quickly.
Yeah, or else we'll all suffocate and die.
Hmm.
Well, on that note, thank you for everyone for clicking in this week. Thank you to our 130 plus subscribers on Twitter. We really appreciate your support. If you haven't followed us on Twitter yet, jump on Twitter. We're at ClickCastFM. Otherwise, you know, follow us or subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Apple Podcasts is my favorite. Overcast is also good. Spotify, less inclined, but also, you know, won't judge you for that, even, you know, because our podcast is hosted on Anchor, who is owned by Spotify. So please don't hate us. But yeah, thanks for listening.